Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. Good to have you be back with us. We are about to have a conversation with Dr. Jal Mehta, who is an assistant professor at the Harvard Graduate School of Education, who wrote this New York Times op-ed that I really was taken with, called Teachers, Will We Ever Learn? He's author of also a forthcoming book, The Allure of Order, High Hopes, Dashed Expectations, and the Troubled Quest to Remake American Schooling. And Jal Mehta, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
And by the way, before we jump into this, I misspoke at the top of the hour. The suspects are, in fact, suspects have not been arrested in the Boston case. So I wanted to clear that up. I misspoke and said they were arrested. They were not arrested. Anyway, sorry. So I really was taken with your article. And as soon as I read it, I called the producer and said, please find him and ask him if he'll come on for a minute to talk to us.
Excellent. I've gotten a fair amount of response, most of it positive, some not so much. So it's really good to talk to you.
So one of the things, though, I think, that just even starting with how you began the report, and I remember this report very well, A Nation at Risk, written in 1983, and even before that we were talking about this, that we've been wrestling with this issue of mediocrity, a rising tide of mediocrity, as you quote from the report, in America for 20 years, for 30 years, maybe 40 years. Curious from your analysis, why we have such a difficult time coming to a real analysis of why, and how do you think we got there?
So in my book, I argue that the kinds of crises we see in American education are essentially kind of built into our system. We have, by international standards, a very decentralized system. We have high levels of poverty, and we have a very under-professionalized teaching force. And so if you put those factors together, at any given point in time, it's easy to say, look at the education over here. It's not what the kids over there are getting. There's a big gap. We're in the midst of a crisis. So there are sort of punctuated moments. Nation at Risk was one. You may remember the Coleman Report from the 60s is another. Where people really call attention to these things, but the underlying problems are always there.
But the question I'm curious, why you think they're always there? I mean, was there a golden age we're missing, or did the golden age of education in America never really exist, or exist in some form that we don't analyze clearly enough?
Well, certainly, I mean, one thing that's pretty obvious if you talk to people who've been around a little longer than I have is that, before the 60s, women had more options in terms of teaching. So clearly, more options than teaching. So clearly, there were more possibilities for talented women now than there have been previously. And so in that sense, there's no, if you look at the kind of statistical evidence, there's no on the long-term measures we have of our education. There's no evidence that there was ever like a huge golden age. But if you think about sort of who was in the classroom, clearly a generation ago, you were more likely to be taught by someone who was a very talented person who didn't have many other good occupational options, and that is no longer the case. So that certainly has changed over time.
And you hear that from a lot of people also. You hear that a lot in African-American communities where people are talking about the incredible teachers they had during segregated education because all the other jobs were limited and you couldn't move anywhere else. So all that's true. You also had a time when we were in this great industrialized age growing in America. And people didn't need a high school diploma nor have to kind of get the work you needed to raise a family.
That's right.
I
think the right way to think about it is that the school system met the demands of what the population needed, at least what the white population needed.
Right.
So the school system, there was never an age where, if you went into every classroom, kids were engaged in highly rigorous learning. There was never an age like that. But an age where what schools were promising to do, which was to get people through graduation into a middle-class lifestyle, yes. And the part of the problem is that the expectations for what we're asking for schools have increased, but the system is basically the same system that it was. And so people now need a four-year college degree or other post-secondary credential to compete in the economy, and the school system is not, on the whole, up for producing that consistently, particularly in high-poverty areas. But not only in high-poverty areas, which is part of the point of my article.
Right. Exactly. It's beyond. It's not just poor communities. We're talking this extends to middle class, upper middle class communities across America. I would say wealthy, but most wealthy communities, they send their kids to private school.
Definitely in Baltimore. I'm from Baltimore, so.
Oh, that's right. You are. And this has the parallel private school system in Baltimore is amazing for communities of means.
Yes, it is. And that's part of what got me into the work in the first place, right? You know, I grew up in Roland Park. I played baseball with kids from all over the city, and the options available to me and the options of the kids that I played baseball with after we finished high school were just not going to be commensurate, and it just didn't seem fair, and that's part of what got me into all this work in the first place.
Well, that's good motivation. I like that. But looking at that, one of the things you point out is that whether we're talking about this the hullabaloo over charter schools and waiting for Superman, whether you're talking about the alternative certification process, Teach for America and the like, that we kind of tout these things, but they really haven't answered the question. The results have been mixed, and things that are in traditional programs often do as well as those.
Yeah. So I think that, you know, so imagine if you probably have, you know, sons, daughters, people you know who've gone through Teach for America, and you probably also know people who've started as new teachers. And just think of what it's like to be a new teacher. You know, you enter the classroom, you've got 30 kids, you may be prepping three or four times, so you're prepping for three or four classes of 30 kids. You know what you learned in college about the subject which you're teaching, if you're lucky, if you don't get placed kind of out of field. And then, you know, we're expecting you to produce kids who can go on to four-year colleges, who are can do well on international assessments, et cetera. And, you know, for the most part, you haven't been prepared to do that. So when the statistical studies come down, then they try to measure, okay, did the alternatively certified teacher or did the person who did their student teaching, which of them in their first year, like which of their students did better? And the differences between those studies are negligible. They're pretty small. But what the point of my article was, if you compared either of those approaches to what we see internationally, where people have more lengthy time after school for teacher prep, it looks a little more like a teaching hospital. You sort of gradually gain responsibility for a classroom as you demonstrate competence. You start with fewer students. You're more closely overseen and mentored. You know, that's just a kind of a much better system compared to really either of the main options that are on the table here.
So, and let's talk a bit about those. I mean, two things very quickly in the time we have left. Why do you think it is so difficult to get the kind of discussion that you proffer in this article and others have tried as well into the mainstream of dialogue about and just really being taken seriously about where how to reform American education? I mean, it doesn't seem to be part of the conversation.
That's a good question. I think that's a complicated question.
Yeah, it is.
You know, the easy answer would be it's not just education. Look at our dialogue about almost any political issue, and you'll find, you know, simple, sloganeering kind of solutions on both sides, and the people, you know, trying to get into a real complex analysis is not our forte. I think in education, I mean, I think on the charter side, and I should be clear, I'm not anti-charter. My article is very clear that, you know, there are some good charter schools, there are some good traditional schools. I'm just for good schools, period, regardless of the label. But I think that there's a lot of hunger, particularly with respect to poor students, for things that work. And so, you know, things come along and they seem to have done well by test score measures over a short period of time. And, you know, people just go and they hold them up. And there's a lot of money behind it, as you know. And you know, my message is a very kind of mixed one, right? Like, there are some things we could do that would make the system much better, but the system that we're in is really struggling in a lot of ways, and that's not an easy message to hear.
And talk about that for a few minutes about what would be the method, one of the things, what you are suggesting that we need to wrestle with and change, that gets fairly radical in terms of what you're proposing.
Yeah, so I'm proposing that we increase the bar for beginning teachers, which is something that's been proposed by the AFT, the American Federation of Teachers, one of the major teacher unions, and also by the chief state school officers, which are, you know, Nancy Grasmick was the Maryland chief state school officer for a long time, so the people who represent the states. But there's sort of pretty broad agreement right now among the states and the unions about the need to raise the bar for initial teacher preparation. So that's a sort of feasible step that could potentially be taken. Now, the kinds of things I would like to see beyond that are the kind of teaching hospital training that I've described, and then all of that coupled with more social support for the kids. I mean, if you look at the international leaders, the formula is pretty clear. It's kind of a professionalism agenda for teachers combined with a sort of welfare state agenda for students. And if you put this, you know, that's not sort of rocket science, right? You train people well to do their jobs, and you support the students that they're working with overall. That'll lead to better outcomes. What I guess is more radical about my agenda is the kind of power shift that at the end of the day, a lot of my sympathies are with schools and with skilled people working in schools. And we have very large and complex bureaucracies that try to control schools. And for the most part, this is the history part of my book, I argue that that just hasn't worked very well, that people who are sitting on North Avenue, I actually have a lot of respect for Dr. Alonzo, but in general, people who've worked on North Avenue are not the people who are going to create good high schools at, you know, Patterson or wherever else. And so basically, if we were able to sort of professionalize the teaching force, teachers and students would have more power, and the state would essentially be less in a kind of controlling role, and I think that would be a healthier state of affairs.
So, when did your book come out, by the way?
May 1st.
Good. Well, then, are you going to make a trip to Baltimore?
I would love to make a trip to Baltimore. Well, I was just there for opening day, so.
Ah, where are you? Okay. Well, please make a trip to Baltimore and join us here on the air. Maybe we can get a larger discussion started with you and some others. On this, I think it would be helpful for all of us.
That would be fantastic.
I'm glad you wrote the piece in New York Times. I'm glad I discovered you through the New York Times. There's another one of our stories we pick from the New York Times and other journals around the country that we find, especially op-eds and investigative pieces to share with all of our listeners. We're talking to Dr. Jal Mehta, who is assistant professor at the Harvard Graduate School of Education. We will be linking on our website at steinershow.org, his op-ed piece, Teachers, Will We Ever Learn? And look forward to talking to him about his forthcoming book, The Allure of Order, High Hopes, Dashed Expectations, and the Troubled Quest to Remake American Schooling. And Dr. Jal Mehta, good to talk to the Baltimorean, and thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Take care. We're going to take a very brief break, and when we return, we're going to take a look at Boston, give you the latest update in the news, and talk to another piece that we actually discovered in the press about the situation. Chloe Angyal wrote an incredible piece in The Nation that we want to share with you and also talk about larger perspectives on this Boston tragedy. We'll be right back.